The Postcast, brought to you by Boyle Sports. Best odds guaranteed, available the day before racing on singles, multiples, online and in shop. Time to switch? Boyle Sports. This is betting.
Hello and welcome to the Racing Postcast in association with Boyle Sports. My name's Sam Hart and today we're going to be looking back at what was a spectacular week of racing last week. Of course, I'm not alone on the Postcast. This week I'm joined by Racing Post Chris Cook and Boyle Sports Leon Blanche. Chris, as I've already mentioned, we've had some week both in the UK and Ireland, but also internationally with the French Guineas, the Man of War in the US and the Victoria Mile in Japan. I'm sure we'll get into some of those races later on the show, but look, we were spoiled as racing fans this week, weren't we?
Yes, it's a great time of year, isn't it? You're still seeing sort of quite high profile horses for the first time in some cases, you know, lots of interesting group races going on, and obviously it's always in the back of your mind you're building up to Royal Ascot, and you know, the Epsom Classics, you know, just over the horizon. Once you get past Royal Ascot, then, you know, things start to spread out a little bit more. But for now, you know, it's like every decent day's racing brings lots of interesting little things, you know, potential clues for big races coming up.
That's it. Plenty of clues about. And Leon, quite a few Royal Ascot clues, as Chris mentioned, they're coming over the weekend. And I've noticed Boyle Sports, they've got 6 anti-post markets up for the meeting already. I know we've got Epsom to come, but plenty of eyes on Ascot at the moment.
Yeah, look, absolutely. It's a big meeting. It's probably the creme de la creme of a worldwide meeting over 5 days. They've done a remarkable job in terms of enticing overseas runners to come to Ascot like for the week, and plenty of trials and plenty of kind of horses that went into people's notebooks, I'm sure, ahead of the big meeting, which kicks off in the middle of June. And it is an exciting time, as Chris said. We've got a couple of Irish classics coming this weekend at the Curragh, and then you've got Epsom, and then you've got Royal Ascot, and then you're back to the Curragh again, like for the Irish Derby at the end of June. So it's a really, really great time if you're a fan of flat racing.
So much good racing it is, and we've seen plenty of good performances, as we've already mentioned. And during this postcast, we'll start off with the first part of the postcast being a focus on York. We'll then go into Newbury for the second half of the postcast, and then we'll finish off by looking at races elsewhere, as well as getting the gentlemen's naps for the week ahead. So let's kick things off with York, gentlemen. Now, we could easily go through plenty of runners, but let's focus on some of the key performances. And the opening day saw Emily Upjohn win the Musadora and secure herself as an 11-10 favourite for the Epsom Oaks with Boyle Sports. Leon, the Oaks is certainly a less open race than the Derby this year, and you can probably see why she's so sure.
Yeah, look, she was very, very impressive. And I think a lot of the comments, the post-race comments from Frankie and from John Gosden, just really goes to show you how high regard this filly is held, and they know what a good filly is, certainly with Enable, having just passed through both of their hands. And with Emily Upjohn, yeah, maybe you could say she was a little bit keen in the early part of the race, but the way she stretched herself and put a winning distance between herself and the horses in behind, the ground was a little bit more testing, I think, than many people expected. So it was a hard enough race. But you would imagine the step up and trip from the Musidora to the Oaks at Epsom shouldn't be a problem. She's 11-10. She is quite short, but looking at the opposition, it'll be interesting to see, does Tuesday, of course, the full sister to Minding, who actually won the Epsom Oaks, Aidan O'Brien has said that she will most likely line up in the Irish Guineas. You must remember that this young filly doesn't turn 3 until June. So she is still quite young. She finished 3rd in the 1,000 guineas at Newmarket. Her pedigree all suggests that she's going to be better when she steps up and trip. I would still quite fancy her over Emily Upjohn, if I'm being honest. It'll be interesting to see, as I said, does she line up at the Curragh this coming Sunday? And it's 7-1 bar those two. Nashua, she was cut 7-1 into 10-1 after the weekend. But I think it's between the top two in the market, I really do. And at the prices, Tuesday a 4-1 for me represents far better value than the Jolly at 11-10.
That's it. She's probably in the main danger Tuesday. And look, I think at the moment it does look between those two, in my opinion as well. And Chris, comparisons have enabled from a lot of judges out there with regards to Emily Upjohn. Look, she's obviously got to do plenty to get onto that level. But looking at the way she ran, as Leon mentioned, quite keen in the early parts of the racing, look, there's plenty more to come from her. You can see it already.
Yeah, she's got a bit of size about her. And I mean, just the fact that, you know, people like John and Frankie are prepared to enthuse about her. And, you know, they're not doing that thing that racing people sometimes do where they throw a blanket over a lot of high praise for a horse. You know, they're encouraging people to think well of this horse. It's funny, it makes me remember that Snowfall was a sort of similarly impressive Musidora winner last year, and we let her start 11-2 for the Oaks, and of course she won by a record margin, because there was Santa Barbara around, wasn't there, and Dubai Fountain and one or two others. I think Emily Upjohn, she put her head sort of so far above the parapet, as it were, when she hacked up at Sandown that time. It's like, you know, everybody's already decided that she's a great one in the making, and you know, and until she goes and proves us absolutely wrong about that, people are just going to carry on believing it. I'm kind of with Leon. I don't see how, you know, 11-10 can possibly be the right price for a horse, you know, with all this time to go still to the Oaks. And given that there's the potential problems there, aren't there? I mean, she didn't settle. And this is her third start. She's supposed to be growing up a bit now. And you couldn't be sure how she's going to cope with an undulating track like Epsom. They're going to go to breakfast with the stars, where there aren't they? Do that thing in the morning where they hack her around with a lead horse. I've covered that day a few times. To me, it never taught you a great deal. I suppose the best that can be said is that she'll get a sort of practice lope around Epsom, but it's not even following the racing line that you have on the day, because they have to follow markers that are out in the middle of the course. And they're obviously not going at racing speed. So I don't think that's going to make a huge amount of difference. If it might show up something really alarming. If she completely fails to come down the hill, you know, that day, then they got something to worry about. But I mean, short of that, I don't think it's going to tell us much. I would tend to imagine there must be something else in the Oaks betting just now, if you were sharp enough to spot it coming. Some horse at double figure odds that's actually going to go there with a serious chance. I think it probably tends to be the case that if 3-year-old fillies are just generally a little bit less exposed than the colts at this time of year. And I'm sure there's something that's going to run really well in the Oaks that, as I say, is just not really on the betting radar at the moment.
What price would you make her for the Oaks at the moment? If you had a price, Chris, what would it have to be?
Well, the thing is, people seem to be backing her 11-10. So, you know, if you're a layer, you don't actually have to go any bigger than that. And, you know, as soon as I send something like, oh, we're, you know, 3-1, 5-1, people are going, well, how much will you lay me? And, you know, then Leon gets me clapped in irons for being an unlicensed layer at that point. So, I don't know. I mean, I do think, realistically, she's got to be 3-1, 7-2, something like that. You know, if you knew everything that there was to know actually about some of these other horses that might be lining up against her. But she has been impressive, and people are going to want to back her at shorter, so you'd be a mug to go bigger.
Interesting to hear. I think she was mightily impressive. I think it does stand out as the favourite for the Oaks at this moment. And I get it could still be quite early for her to be the price that she is at the moment, but look, if she turns up on the day, you can only imagine that price might even shorten into evens on the day. Like Chris says, a lot of people might be backing her even at 11-10. Now, other big races on day one, the other big race was the 1895 Duke of York Clipper Logistics Stakes, where we saw the well-backed Highfield Princess went in for the John Quinn Yard. She did that very well. A bit of a disappointment with Dragon Symbol, which was a very interesting run. Chris, a quick word on that race.
Yeah, it was a really intriguing sprint. And there's going to be plenty more of them, you know, through the summer. I love the sort of the programme for sprint races. You know, we've already had the Abernant and the Palace House. There were two that were really short here that you could worry about, Minzal and Dragon Symbol. Dragon Symbol, obviously very high class last year, but ended on a down note. New trainer, new jockey, and took a bit of a hold, didn't he? You know, again, the yard's not going all that strongly at the moment, you know, certainly not as strong as some other, you know, with the big name new market yards. I would think we'll see better from Dragon Symbol in time for a certainty. Minzal maybe ran his race in third. You know, he hasn't won since the Gym Crack, which is a couple of years ago now. But he, there's obviously been issues, hasn't there? He's been so lightly raced. I still thought that was a pretty good effort in third, and you know, I can see him winning something. But Highfield Princess, you know, winning like that, just a revelation, considering, you know, she was in the Buckingham Palace, was it last summer? You know, the 7 furlong handicap at Royal Ascot off a mark of 92, and now she's winning Group 2 sprints like that. You know, very impressive what they've done with her. She's maybe she's got even more to give, because I think she's certainly run better than her handicap mark would have suggested, in beating Spycatcher and Minzal and, you know, other interesting horses like Garouche further back.
I think we'll see plenty of the other horses come on for the run, for sure. Like you mentioned there, Chris, Dragon Symbol and Minzal. I'm sure we'll see better from them, and even some of the others in the field, like The Dream and Garrus. We've already seen Garrus already. But I think we've got some decent sprinters. Like you say, the division and the programme does look very good. Now, let's move on to the first day of the Dante Festival now. And the highlight of that day was the Dante. And Desert Crown, the talking horse around the Derby, did the business for Sir Michael Stout. Now, really good to see, well, really nice to see Michael Stout have a decent prospect for owner side Sahel again. Leon, what price do Ball Sports go for him for the Derby at the moment? What's your thoughts on his chances at Epsom?
Yeah, look, I mean, he's 2-1 favourite at the moment. And just to echo your thoughts, great to see Sir Michael Stout have a real live Derby contender. And I think this is what Desert Crown is. A couple of pointers on him for me. I think probably the most important thing that Stout said after the race was all about his temperament, in that he's got such a relaxed manner, such a very solid, sound mind. And I think for any horse going to Epsom, let alone only being on your third start of your racing career, but the whole preliminaries, the crowd, the noise, a lot of horses lose their race before they even start their race. And to hear these words being spoke about Desert Crown would only give you encouragement if you were in that camp. He put the race to bed so quickly. I was so impressed with that turn of foot in the home straight. I mean, he won by 3 1/4 lengths. Some people have said he went a little bit right, but I think he was in front long enough. I don't think that's anything to really worry about. And I was massively, massively taken by that performance. Stone Age, he was really, really good at Leopardstown. The time was exceptionally quick. The only little bit of reservation I have was, would the step up and trip really suit him? Or is he a really top class 1 1/4 horse? That's my only little reservation about Stone Age, who's second in the betting at 3-1. Changing of the Guard, he impressed me at Chester, I must say. And I thought Epsom would be no problem to him. Small, well-balanced horse, should handle all the undulations quite easily. And big news today that Frankie Dettori will be riding Piz Badil for Dunica O'Brien. That's a very, very intriguing kind of matchup here, that Frankie has gone for Piz Badil. Of course, normally he would have picked up one of the Aidan O'Brien runners, but they've struck a deal to ride for Dunica, for the Niarchos family. So that's an interesting one. And Dunica has always said that he rates this horse so highly. An end-to-end gallop at Epsom is sure to suit him. He's got a real strong heart. On a couple of occasions, he's looked beaten, but he's fought back. He's a 9-1 chance. I think the Derby, it's a quite open race as far as I'm concerned. I know the top two in the betting are a little bit ahead in the market at 2 and 3-1 respectively. But I think the Derby is an intriguing race this time around.
It is. And I'm looking at it. It's so open at this moment in time. And it wouldn't surprise you to see another kind of Wings of Eagles or Serpentine moment, and one of sort of Hayden O'Brien's fifth string go and win it. It really wouldn't shock you this year.
Let's say Serpentine. It just brings back all those memories. I don't mind a shock in the Derby, but you do like to see a race where you think the fancied horses have been given a fair chance, and that race didn't work out very well. But, you know, well done to Emmett McNamara. I think it's a bit tough, that news about Frankie, for Gavin Ryan, who's obviously ridden Piz Badil all three starts so far, and there's nothing wrong with him as a jockey. And, you know, he must have thought he was going there with a live chance, but he got jocked off by Frankie Dettori. I mean, it happens to guys from time to time, doesn't it? It's happened the last 2 years in Derby. Maybe if he can pick up a ride somewhere else, he can do what Adam Kirby did last year. You know, he ended up winning it after getting jocked off John Leeper. And the year before, Tom Marquand was supposed to be on English King and then lost that ride and finished second on some outsider. So
that was it. Yeah,
there's some precedent there. You always feel for a guy. I mean, you know, he must be thinking, what more do I have to do? I've done nothing wrong on this horse. But there you go.
Yeah, obviously the Ballysacks winner from this year. And yeah, a lot of people fancy him, Pizbadal. So Frankie now at that mount. But Chris, just a quick word with regards to Desert Crown. We don't know how good the field he beat could be. And I think Leon mentioned that the horse went right towards the end. And I think that's just due to the fact that the horse didn't want to hit the front as soon as possible. But I think Kingscote even said he didn't want to hit the front that soon, but I think he had no choice.
Yeah, and you know, you have to allow for the fact this is only the horse's second start. I think in those circumstances, he's shown quite an impressive degree of professionalism, really. I mean, you see some more experienced horses failing to settle. He didn't do that. You know, he settled quite kindly at the back of the field and made his run forward when asked. In a good time as well. I mean, it was the time of the Dante was like 2 seconds faster than the Group 2 for fillies over the same distance an hour before. I think there's nothing but positives to be taken from this. And the only downside is that you nearly think that you've seen the Derby winner now and you know what's going to happen. I know if Leon was to give me a charity bet right now for the Injured Jockeys Fund, I'd certainly rather be going with Desert Crown than the Oaks Fav. He's beaten some good horses in the Royal Patronage in second. He's got some excellent form, won the Royal Lodge, beat the subsequent Guineas winner, didn't he, that day? Ran well in the Guineas himself. There's a Group 1 winner in the field, I suppose. That's El Bodegon. He didn't really run his race, did he? And it might he's not come on, or it might be that he needs softer ground. But there was enough quality in that field to make you think this is solid form, and the time was solid, at least that. And the horse has got improvement in him. I mean, when you've got the trainer saying he's only just got into the race in time because he had a setback early in the year, it sort of makes you think this horse is going to be really hard to beat at Epsom. And I say that as somebody who went into the race kind of wondering if there was a bit of sentimentality going on. You know, Desert Crown's odds for the Derby had crashed so much, you know, other horses running into problems that had been Derby candidates. Luxembourg is the one I'm thinking of. Nothing else that he beat at Nottingham had won since. So you had every reason to doubt the sort of seriousness of his credentials to step straight into Group 2 level. But he's certainly proved that he belongs in the conversation. More than that, he's the right favourite.
It's one of those where you can only beat what's in front of you, like I say. And the horse, we don't know how good this horse could be. But look, favourite for the Derby at the moment, the Derby picture is slowly kind of, we're slowly seeing the best of it now and potentially seeing who's going to line up as favourite. I've got a feeling that Desert Crown might be that horse on the day. On the Thursday, Lilac Robe was the other big group winner, won the Middleton Filly Stakes. She won for the Informed Haggis team, who I'm sure we'll be discussing in part two of the show. Leon, Jer Lyons horse in here, Thunder Kiss, went off favourite. Jer Lyons just hasn't been able to really do things over in the UK, which I find strange. He's one of my favourite trainers in the business. I'm sure we'll see a lot better from Thunder Kiss when step back up to a mile and a half, but it was a really interesting race on Thursday, wasn't it?
Yeah, look, I mean, in terms of the favourite, it's a kind of hard one to work out because over the mile, what was it, 2.5 furlongs, you would have thought that it would have suited, but I don't know. Just kind of, to me, I mean, it was well held inside the final furlong. Look, I mean, the vet said that it lost its right fore shoe, so maybe there's a little bit of an excuse that you can give towards the performance. I'm sure they would have been a little bit disappointed to only finish third. But the winner, you've got to give a lot of credit to Lilac Road. Really stayed the distance exceptionally well. I thought doing its best work towards the finish. And for me, in terms of Lilac Road, wouldn't be surprised at all to see that one maybe step up and trip, because all of its runs have been done. I think that was the furthest it's ever went in its career, a mile and 2.5 furlongs. So I think this filly could actually step up and trip, and we might even see her to better effect over a mile and a half. There's a couple of question marks about the favourite, but no, there was no hard luck story. There never really is at York. It's one of the fairest tracks I know, And I think Lilac Road was a very, very decent winner.
She was very good, and I agree, you stepped up to a mile and a half. She could potentially be even better. Now, let's go on to the final day of York now, and there's only one big headline from the day, and that was the return of Stradivarius winning his record third Yorkshire Cup. He's the people's horse on the flat. He's so lovable, and Chris, it's great to have him back for another season.
It is, yeah, at 8 years old. And just to show the remarkable quality of this horse, I saw Simon Rowlands, who's a time expert often on Twitter, letting us know a bit of detail on the quality these horses show. He pointed out Stradivarius has run 11 seconds on the nose for the third last furlong of the Yorkshire Cup there, you know, which is hard to do for top quality horses over shorter distances. And, you know, here he is at his stage, you know, a veteran stayer. He's got remarkable gears for a mile and six horse or 2 mile horse. Again, maybe not the absolute top quality rivals from his division that he's beating there, but the way that he's done it, you couldn't ask for more. And he's sustaining his quality right to the end of his career. Gold Cup will be, you know, even more of a test. You've got Kyprios that I like a lot, and Trushan at the top of the betting. So Stradivarius' connections are talking about how important the ground will be. Clearly they don't want plenty of rain at Ascot that week, because that plays right into Trushan's hands and against them. But, you know, he winning that race there, that makes him the winning most group horse there's ever been in European flat racing. So, you know, we've got a Hall of Fame now for British flat racing, don't we? And he should be going right in there as soon as he's eligible.
Yeah, 100%.
Got to echo those. I mean, an eight-year-old, I think, I'm nearly sure, did Yates win his last Gold Cup as an eight-year-old too?
Yes.
Yeah, and I mean, I just think we've got to take our hats off to Aidan O'Brien, yes, for Yates, but John and Thady Gosden. I mean, to get an eight-year-old full horse to keep his zest for racing when, of course, the mind might be elsewhere is just remarkable. And to hear, you know, to actually hear that time for the last furlong goes to show you how much class this horse still possesses. And the quicker the ground, the better he is. And racing, you know, we've talked about this a number of times. Racing needs horses that the public can go and follow. And this is exactly what Stradivarius is. And look, I know it won't be music to the ears of Trushan fans, but I think we all want the ground to be quick on the Thursday of Ascot, because this is what it requires. This is what people want to see. They want to see Stradivarius, win a fourth Gold Cup. And the roof will come off. And this is what it's about. We need big names. We need them to bring racing all the way to the top. And this is what Stradivarius is doing. So hats off to Frankie. Hats off to Thady and John Gosden. And fingers crossed we get quick ground for a Gold Cup.
Well, what I loved was how relaxed Stradivarius was during the race. And, you know, needed a bit of rousting along as he went around the bend. But as soon as Stradivarius kind of woke up to that, and Frankie was sitting there on the bridle, he lit the winner a long way out, didn't he? But I mean, fair play to Thunderous as well. We've got to give credit to that horse, because that horse and Mark and Charlie Johnson, that horse just did what a Mark and Charlie Johnson horse does and just kept going, Chris. But I just love the way that this horse races. He's so simple, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, just on the subject of Thunderous that you mentioned there, he's a Dante winner, isn't he? From the lockdown year, he won his Dante in July, which, if I remember correctly, was it even after the Derby that year? Anyway, I backed him the time before in the Ormond at Chester, and it didn't quite happen. He's running well without quite getting first place, Thunderous, at the moment, but you'd think they'll find a race for him somewhere. Stradivarius, yeah, I mean, I'm not sure how straightforward he is. I've seen him around the yard a bit, and he can be a handful. I think there's times when he's maybe even a ball of fire. So again, as Leon said, for them to keep him focused this long is quite a job. Just on his point, I mean, we certainly do need stars, but we do also need for that ground to be have enough juice in it for so that they run Trushan. You know, I mean, that what we really want in racing is competition, isn't it? And, you know, those two horses taking each other on at Ascot, that's what would get my attention. More than a star performance, what you really want is a race, an actual contest where you can't be sure in advance what's going to happen. And that's what I'm hoping for. Anyway, Trushan's got his own big following these days. Yeah. So Yeah. You know, those two camps will hopefully face off in the middle of June.
Yeah, and we've got the young pretender, as you mentioned there, Chris.
Yeah.
Brios. I mean, I was at Leopardstown on Friday evening to watch him. And, I mean, he's got an explosive turn of foot. So he adds a little bit to the Gold Cup as well. And look, I mean, being trained by the master down in Ballydoyle, and they'll know exactly what is required to win at Ascot. So here's hoping the three of them all line up and we're in for one of the races of the week.
I tell you what, wasn't he even fancied for the Derby about this time last year? Or maybe
one
a little
stage,
bit.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure he might even have been a price-wise tip at some stage. And then he managed to crock himself having a fight with the stalls at Royal Ascot. But it's really interesting to see the progress he's making now. I think he'd be the bet in the race just now if you had to pick one.
Kiprios and Trushan currently 11-4 joint favourites with Ball Sports. Stradivarius 4-1 for the race and 10-1 Barlow. So it'd be interesting to see. But I think, look, what a performance it was on Friday. And I'm hoping that all of racing is going to be up behind him in just over 4 weeks' time in the Gold Cup at Ascot. Now that's York, but join us in just a few seconds where we'll look back at Newbury, where maybe we saw the best horse since Frankel.
Stay ahead of the field with Racing Post Members Club, featuring unlimited access to the Racing Post digital newspaper, exclusive online content, replays from all UK and Irish racecourses, and more. If you're a new customer, you can use the code POST22 to get 50% off your first 3 months of Members Club Ultimate. Head to racingpost.com/postcast to find out more.
Welcome back to the Racing Postcast with myself, Sam Hart, Chris Cook and Leon Blanche. Let's look at the weekend action from Newbury now, gents. And what was the William Haggis show with three big winners on the card there? We'll start off with the opening race and Tyver Flo, who won the Carnarvon Stakes. He was almost caught by Araz in the closing stage of that race. And maybe a few Royal Ascot clues here, Chris, in this race. And are there any that you took out looking forward to bigger targets?
Well, I mean, they're both of these three-year-olds are reckoned to be heading for the Commonwealth Cup. And Tyber Flo is interesting because, you know, William Haggis says he's just learning to be a sprinter. And he's just beginning to fathom it. Fair enough. You know, the way he spoke about him, you'd have to respect any horse that gets that kind of chat. But you've got to say, Eras was very likable with that finishing effort. And he was, you know, he's held up right out the back. And I think the post came just in time for Tyber Flo. Stiffer track at Ascot, you'd think would play to the runner-up strength, which is not to say that either of them is necessarily going to win the Commonwealth Cup, but it's going to be a hot race.
It is, and Leon, I know plenty of people who really fancied Araz on the day, and Jim Crowley tried to go from last to first, only beating a short head in the end, and I agree with Chris. I mean, if you're taking one out of the race going into Royal Ascot, it's got to be him, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, look, it was a very taken performance by him, and to echo what Chris has said, the stiffer six at Ascot is bound to play to his strengths. But you've got to also give an honourable mention to the winner because he was right up there. As soon as the gates opened, he wasn't never too far off the pace. And yes, he just hung on. But if you take what William Haggis has said in terms of he's only learning how to be a sprinter, I'm sure he'll be better as well come the Commonwealth Cup at Ascot. But Eras ran a blinder. A lot of people did fancy him on the day. He was well supported. He just failed to get to Tyber Flo. There was only a short head between them. And Ascot is quite a stiff six. So you'd imagine the track should suit the Richard Hannon runner.
You really do. And we'll have to see what happens. But I do like Araz potentially for the Commonwealth Cup. Now let's go on to the following race, which is the Al Ryan Stakes. This is registered as the Aston Park Stakes. Ilarab won the race, and although being a horse that I've actually struggled to be on the right side of, Leon, he was certainly on a going day on Saturday.
Yeah, look, I mean, he was on a go. I mean, it was a nice performance over the mile and a half. Did it well, in fairness. There was no real, I mean, maybe I'm trying to think of the favourite. The filly was a little bit disappointing on the day, never really picked up. But in terms of Ilarab, you can only do what you have to do and you can only beat kind of like what's in front of you. And Ilarab has done it very well. And I mean, the Haggis team at the moment, they're in tremendous form. And certainly this was another really, really decent performance. And it was it was kind of the manner in which I thought that it won. It won with a little bit to spare. Even though it beat Scope by a neck, I always thought that Ilarab was going to do it. I mean, kept on extremely well. Scope, to me, would suggest that it needs to step up and trip, and maybe we'll see Scope in the Ascot Gold Cup as well. But I think Ilarab, yeah, slowly into stride, but really just tracked the leaders and done exactly what it was required. And I, in my opinion, I think the neck, he was all that value and maybe a little bit more for me.
Yeah, you've kind of stolen the line. That was going to lead into Chris with there, but Scope was definitely the one I'd be taking out the race here, Chris. He's clearly going to have eyes on the Gold Cup, I'm sure. And he's genuinely probably one of the best-looking horses I've seen. A stunning-looking chestnut, Scope is. And all credit to Ilarab, but you'd imagine Connection would be delighted with the way Scope ran moving into Ascot.
Yeah, I mean, it's only a start back for Scope, isn't it? You know, yeah. you'd think this is maybe at least half a mile too short for him. And he's come with a neck of winning a Group 3. So, yeah, great run. And maybe even a bit softer ground the next time and a longer distance. I mean, he's not actually all that scopey, is he? and you wonder if he's, you know, if he can improve on what he was showing at the end of last year, which I think he would need to be a proper Gold Cup horse. But there's races to be won with him for sure. He's not all that heavily raced. I think that's only his eighth start. And it was this Shada, wasn't it, who was further back and never picked up, having been fancied. Obviously, she won Champions Day at the end of last year. But again, she's from the Roger Vera yard, which isn't just all guns blazing yet. And you would think maybe the next time we see her, we'll see something closer to the real Ishada.
It is going to be interesting, isn't it? I think Ishada, yeah, all eyes on Royal Ascot Fair as well. So we'll have to wait and see. Now let's move on to the box office performance of the week. Baid in the Lock-In. Wow, there's plenty of questions that can be asked around whether he's the best horse since Frankel. Is he going to be better stepped up to 10 furlongs? What has he beaten in the race? Now look, he's 7 from 7. He travelled well within himself throughout the race. And when Jim asked to kick, the response was instant. It's everything you wanted to see from a champion. Chris, you'd imagine he'd stay at a mile probably until late July with the Sussex Stakes in mind. And then the Judgment sounds like the plan for him. And you'd imagine that even potentially sort of France or Champions Day at the end of the season for the Champions Stakes. I just think he's stunning. I do you think he genuinely is the best horse we've seen since Frankel?
Oh, boy. There's a lot of good horses that you you'd be worried about slighting by saying thing like that. Just off the top of my head, I suppose the ratings will tell the tale, and I don't have those in front of me. He's full of quality, that's for sure. But this is just the first run back, and you got to be careful, don't you, about saying too many nice things about a horse that's got a future at stud. Against stronger opposition on another day, it'll be interesting to see what happens. You would have to say the Queen Anne at Royal Ascot does look his for the taking. I'm not sure what's going to turn up there that would have any right to get closer to him than Real World did on Saturday. So that is probably going to be, you know, the second procession of the day at Royal Ascot. And it's the first race, isn't it? So, you know, if the bookies take a pummeling at short odds on Baid, then, well, it's just a lost leader and people have got a bit of money to play with. So hopefully that's how Leon will be seeing it. You know, that's the enlightened way to look at it. You keep your customers happy and then hope that they come back and bet on the handicaps. and then after that, it gets more interesting. I mean, the Sussex would be more interesting. He'd be giving weight to three-year-olds. And then we're expecting that he'll step up to a mile and a quarter at York. It's a sort of Frankel-esque four-year-old campaign, isn't it? It's very enjoyable to have a horse of his quality around and to still be asking the question, how good is he? He's been very, very patiently taken up through the ranks by William Haggis, and there must be a lot of pressure with a horse like this to not muck it up. And he seems to carry that quite gracefully, I think, the trainer. And he's, you know, he's not skipping any dances with him either. It would be a fascinating story to follow. But I don't see, I mean, and I'm speaking as somebody who likes to try and get a favourite beaten and look for something that's unconsidered. I'm not really seeing the weakness in Baid. I'm not seeing a compelling reason to be taking him on at any stage in the immediate future.
Okay, yeah, I agree. I think the Queen Anne's for his taking. I think the Sussex will be very interesting, especially if one of these Godolphin three-year-olds comes and takes him on. It'll be probably his toughest race over a mile, and then looking forward to seeing if he could be better over 10 furlongs. Look, Leon, horses like this draw you into the game. I actually remember when I first started watching racing, I went to Goodwood to see Frankel win his first Sussex Stakes. And I remember that day and how much excitement it gave me in drawing me into the sport. And Bayard on Saturday gave me that similar kind of feeling. And it's so good for the sport to have a horse like this that can draw people into the game.
Oh, absolutely. Look, I mean, we spoke about Stradivarius. His longevity is remarkable. But Bayard, I mean, I think his career, it's all the more remarkable that he never even raced at two. And that, you know, he started off at Leicester and he just went through the ranks, listed. Then he obviously stepped up at Longchamp for his first Group One. And then he beat Palace Pier, who, by the way, was exceptional and still is exceptional. Yeah. But I just felt that the kind of good to soft ground at Ascot, you know, it wasn't to Bayard's liking. I think, again, on good or quicker ground, he's going to be almost unbeatable. And it's just how easily he settled off at quite a sedate pace at Newbury. And he was, Jim Crowley was able to just do whatever he really wanted with him. He won by 3.25 lengths. I know the Racing Post rating is 129. I think his official rating is 125. But for me, if he keeps winning in that manner and keeps progressing the way he is, I think the Judmont is absolutely tailor-made for him. It's such a flat track. It's 1.25 miles. He settles so easily now that, I mean, I'm sure he'll get that. And I'm sure William Haggis would love to bring him to York for the Ebor meeting and win the Judmont. It's a phenomenal race to win. We've had such an illustrious list of superstars to win that particular contest. But Royal Ascot is in for a treat on the opening race because it will be a procession. I just don't see anything to come close to this horse. He is a real, real superstar. And credit must go to William Haggis, the way he's managed his career and the way he's managed expectations. He's done it exceptionally well, and he's with the right man for sure. And it's great that we're getting to see him as a four-year-old and to do his stuff, because in all likelihood, who knows, will we get to see him as a five-year-old? So let's enjoy him right now while we can.
Yeah, we really need to. And he's now 2-5 favourite for the Queen Anne with Boar Sports. I can only see him potentially shortening closer as we get to that meeting. Look, he's magnificent. That is Bayard. Now, join us in just a few moments where we'll get the panel's thoughts on some of the racing from elsewhere over the past 7 days, along with the team's naps of the week ahead.
Are you football crazy? Then Racing Post's new podcast could be just for you. Mark Langdon's Bet Clubs brings all of the best football betting insight from Racing Post's top football tipster. As well as that, Mark will be joined each week by a friend from the betting community to guide listeners through their best bets. Simply search Mark Langdon's Bet Clubs on your podcast app of choice and listen today.
Thanks for joining us for the final part of the podcast, where we'll be looking back at some of the other races from elsewhere over the last 7 days. Chris, we had the French Guineas, the 1000 won by Mongoustine and the 2000 won by Godolphin's Modern Games. And I know you were also very keen to discuss the Manor War Stakes from Belmont Park, where Highland Chief won, who used to be trained by Paul and Oliver Cole, now with Graham Motion. What do we make of those three races?
Well, so the Manor War was especially interesting to me because Yabir has gone off so short. Sunny American Odyssey, he's been reported as having started at odds of 11 to 20, so two on basically. And that's having lost two races already this year, doing essentially the same thing where, we know what Yabir does by now. He starts at the back and finishes strongly. And it worked at the Breeders' Cup. But it hasn't worked since, and it didn't work again in New York on Saturday. And if you were close to this horse, I think you'd have to worry about the amount of time it took him to come out the stalls. I mean, everything else comes out, and then it's very nearly 2 seconds before he emerges. You know, if you had backed him, you were already worried, I'd say, at that stage. As it turns out, they've gone such a crawl that it doesn't cost him anything to make up that ground. But in the end, it's the crawl that does for him, I think, because had they gone a stronger pace, then the ones in front would be starting to get tired in the straight, and he'd have a chance to run on past them. As it is, a couple of them just keep going and he can't quite reel them in. And the winner is Highland Chief, as you mentioned, who obviously used to be with the Coles. He hasn't won since the lockdown Royal Ascot when he won one of the new handicaps. And although, you know, if I was doing something else Saturday evening and I didn't see this race till after it happened, I might have been interested in trying to pick the winner against Ymir. I don't think I'd have landed on Highland Chief, you know, however long I'd looked at these five runners. But credit to him and credit to Graham Motion for getting a nice pot out of him. Ymir is just going to be one of those sort of fascinating conundrums where every turns up, you know, he's a horse that's full of quality, but, you know, maybe you're going to end up jumping up and down and stamping on your hat. There's got to be a big prize for him somewhere, but he needs things to fall right, doesn't he? He needs a strong pace and a clear run.
Agreed. I think Ymir is definitely a horse going into the season that I thought was going to take some beating in a lot of big races, and I think he will still win a big one. It was interesting on Saturday, and like you say, you wouldn't have picked out Highland Chief, not a horse that I would have been sort of looking to back. But yeah, fantastic performance from Highland Chief. Leon, just a few lines on the French Guineas. So I was quite impressed actually with the 1,000, the way that Cachet, the Kipco 1,000 Guineas horse ran in that race. That horse ran from the front and ran all the way to the line, and unfortunately didn't win the race. It was won by Gerard Mosse on Mongoustine, and also well on the good Dolphin horse, Modern Games, who looks like he's going for the Prix du Jockey Club next.
Yeah, look, I mean, such a hard luck story for George Bowie. What a great young trainer and such an affable guy when he speaks to the press or when he's on TV or anything. You know, he's giving you a lot of information, and it's great to see that from such a young trainer. Under pressure, probably with a quarter of a mile to go, and then really rallied in the final furlong and just held. You know, look, to be beaten, what was it, ahead? There was only a short head to third as well, Times Square. It was a fascinating run and a fascinating race. And Modern Games, I mean, Charlie Appleby has got three brilliant colts. I think that's the only way to describe them, because Native Trail, obviously going to go to the Curra. Caribus will go to Royal Ascot, and interesting that they're going to try and step Modern Games up to try and do the French Guineas and Derby double. I suppose you're never going to know until you try it, but it will be very interesting to see how he gets on, and how can Charlie Appleby keep these three colts away from each other as the season progresses is going to be a very difficult task. One horse I would, however, take out of the 2,000 Guineas is Ancient Rome. I think he was under pressure for maybe three furlongs out, but kept on extremely well to be only beaten a little over two lengths. And I certainly think that his breeding, Ancient Rome, the French Derby, should excite people. I think the step up and trip will definitely help him. But brilliant for Charlie Appleby, another classic, and a hard luck story for George Bowie, certainly with Cachet. It would have been a remarkable training feat to win the French Guineas in a short space of time, only 2 weeks from Newmarket. So hats off to Cachet. In my opinion, she's lost absolutely nothing in defeat, and hopefully we'll get to see her at Royal Ascot.
Cachet looking like heading to the Coronation Stakes, which I think she'd probably go very well in. And yeah, like you say, Charlie Appleby looks like he could win three 2,000 Guineas with the Irish at the weekend. He's got an odds on shot, I think, in Native Trail this weekend, second in the Newmarket equivalent. So it is really interesting, and we've had plenty of other Royal Ascot clues from Ireland over the weekend. We've already mentioned Kipriossi won on the Friday, but we also had Nace on the Sunday, Leon, where we had some good 2-year-old and 3-year-old performances there. Were there any that stood out to you?
Yeah, I mean, look, the Antarctic is obviously going to be on everyone's lips in terms of being a kind of a full brother to the excellent Batash. He got the job done, but I was more taken with the second horse making his race course debut, Maymar, for Michael O'Callaghan. I mean, that's a really good run to only finish three quarters of a length behind the Antarctic. So that's one that I would definitely put into your notebook, because five furlongs at Nace, it's a very stiff finish at Nace. So it'll be interesting to see where the O'Callaghan team decide to go next with Maymar. Another horse from Michael Stable who was really good was Twilight Jet. And I think this horse will most definitely go to the Commonwealth Cup. He's around about, I'm trying to see what price he is now. I think he's a 12-1 chance for the Commonwealth Cup at the Royal Meeting. New York City, who finished second, was well touted before the race, but he was well and truly put in his place by Twilight Jet. And the one thing that Royal Ascot is a stiff six as well. So I think the way Twilight Jet pulled away in the maybe the last half of furlong, you'd have to be very impressed with that performance. So here's hoping, because Michael O'Callaghan, they do put an awful lot of money into the game. Lee Roach is a very, very good jockey. Used to be stationed with Dermot Weld, but has since become the number one man for O'Callaghan. And it'd be great to see this team go very, very well with Twilight Jet in the Commonwealth Cup.
It would. And Chris, were there any performances elsewhere that you wanted to mention?
Well, speaking of Michael O'Callaghan, I quite like the look of Harry Tyme at Navan on Saturday. And I gather there's some consideration being given to sending him over for the Coventry. I think he's 20-1, which me looks potentially on the big side. I wonder if Leon had any thoughts about that. But, you know, look, you have to wait until nearer the time. But I think if he turns up, I shall be taking an interest.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, the Coventry. I mean, is Persian Force is the current favourite for that? The Brocklesby winner won at the weekend as well. As ITV came off air, I think Persian Force won again. And I think Persian Force is quite short for the Coventry, Leon. Is that right?
Yeah, no, that's right. And look, I mean, I would echo exactly what Chris has said there. Again, it was another good finish. And the one thing about Navan and Nace, they both have stiff finishes. So certainly a stiff finish at Ascot would not pose a problem. And again, he was pushed out and won very comfortably in the end. That was over 5.5 furlongs. So the Coventry is 6. It shouldn't pose too much of a problem whatsoever in terms of that horse going to Royal Ascot. We do have a short price favourite, as you said, Sam. But again, it's nice to see Michael O'Callaghan with horses that are going to the Royal Meeting with a chance. And nice to see a new stable on the up and coming.
There you go. Yeah, plenty of action to analyse this week. And we've seen plenty of Royal Ascot winning performances potentially. So a few horses to have in your notebook moving into Ascot. Now let's end the show by getting the guys' naps for the week ahead.
This will not be beaten.
Looking at the week ahead, we have some really good racing, actually, even during the week. On Thursday, we've got the Heron Stakes at Sandown, where we see the exciting Aku Najla for the Varian team taking on Her Majesty's horse Reach for the Moon, a horse that a lot of people were hoping would turn up in the Derby. That's not going to be the case by the looks of things. And we also have Goodwood on Friday. We have the Cocked Hat Stakes and the Height of Fashion Stakes, along with the Irish Guineas at the weekend and the Sandy Lane and Temple Stakes from Haydock. Leon, where's your best bet coming from this week?
Yeah, look, I'm going to go to Wednesday, the 7:10 at Cork. It's a mile maiden. We spoke about Geraldine's earlier on the show, and a horse called Janobi is running. He was second behind Hotel Wren of Noel Mead at Leopardstown, only beaten a short head, but just got caught in the final strides. Cork should suit, and that'd be my nap for this weekend. Janobi at 7:10 on Wednesday.
There you go. Colin Keane takes the mount for that one there. And Chris, who's your best bet this week?
All this flashy racing at the weekend, but the race I'm into is a Class 6 at Ayr on Wednesday. the 2:10, it's a bit of a recovery mission. There's a horse called Slangeva, which is what you say in Scotland when you're having a drink. It means good health, I think, literally. Slangeva is a four-year-old filly with Katie Scott, and I quite fancied her at Hamilton on Friday, I think it was, quite a big price, and managed to get done by Peachy Carnahan on a going day, which is like being struck by lightning. But I think, you know, she might still be sailing just a little bit below the radar. She won't be 20-1 this time, but she, you know, Katie Scott's horses, I think, tend to get underestimated. And she's even a couple of pounds lower just because of the way the race conditions are worked out in the handicap this time than she was then. 6 furlongs with a bit of dig in the ground is nearly ideal for Slangeva, and I shall be having another go. There's some more rain due here tomorrow, and I hope it turns up.
And Chris, just before you go, it's interesting how you pronounce that, because the first word means good health for us in Irish as well, Slancha. But interesting how you put the two of them together in Slangeva. So anyway, a bit of a useless fact, but there you go. Slancha is good health in Gaelic.
There we go. That's in the 210 at Ayr for Chris. That's it for this week's podcast. Bruce will be back on Friday with Robbie Wilders and others to look ahead at the weekend's action, which, as mentioned earlier, includes the 1,000 and 2,000 guineas from Ireland. Big thanks to my guests, as always, Chris Cook and Leon Blanche. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast. And if you are having a bet this week, do remember to gamble responsibly. Thanks for listening.